In this episode of Cubs Out Loud, we crack open a book and enjoy some summer reading. While experiencing some technical difficulties, the Cubs are joined by author Wayne Hoffman to discuss his latest book, An Older Man, a standalone sequel to his other book, Hard. Wayne tells the story of his main character, Mo, as he traverses the highs and lows of Bear Week in Provincetown. So be sure to grab your reading glasses as COL 325 starts now. It's August 9th, 2015. I'm Jeff.
Who's your bear? That's right. I am your bear.
I'm Damon.
Everybody dance now!
That makes me Gary.
Don't hurt nobody with your bad self.
And welcome to Cubs Out Loud, the Bear Podcast of Indeterminate Length, episode number 325. Nailed it that time.
Nice.
I've been screwing up the last couple of times, but that's okay. And you know what? Why don't we just go right into this? I have a job!
Yay!
Doesn't start until the 24th. I might have mentioned this last week, but that's okay.
Boo.
I got an interview with Apple! Yay!
Double yay.
I did an interview with Apple 2 days ago.
Yay.
Hopefully that went well.
Okay.
So for us here, it's next Thursday. For you guys listening, it was last Thursday. You know, considering my last two interviews that I did last month, I'm going to say nailed it and hopefully continuing that tradition. So what would be really cool is I get a job offer from Apple before I even start at the job that I actually got. And then I can just say, you know what? You don't even have to pay me for it because, you know, I got a job at Apple. You know what? It pays more. And two, this is the job I want. This is really the job I want. So, the other job sounds great. It's one of those things where the environment sounds like something where you don't see they actually pride themselves on low attrition. Once people are in, not many people leave. Ah. And that's exactly what I want. Let me tell you something about my jobs in the past. since like 2007 or something like that. So I got a job at Unisys. 3 years after getting the job at Unisys, I was laid off. Then I got a job at One West Bank. 3 years after getting that job, I was laid off.
Womp womp.
My last job, essentially, they referred to it as laid off, quote unquote, but that was just end the contract. Mm-hmm. And that we knew from the beginning that was going to end. Of course, the crazy thing was it was originally a 12-month contract, and they kept me for 15. Huh, check that out. Hmm. So hopefully I'll nail this interview with Apple or nail this interview with Apple, timey-wimey, get that job.
So here we go. Yay. Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, being bored at home.
Aw.
And poor as mud.
Aww.
Well, that's going to change real soon.
Crossing fingers.
In 3 weeks or less. Moving on. Damon?
So it's been a while. A couple weeks ago since we're recording, I went to Columbus and I was there for a contest. I went with my friend Ben Stick, who's been on the show, we went to do a Tallymaster contest. I'm not going to talk about the contest. I'm going to leave that alone. It's a sore spot. But anyway, but the fun things were I got to spend time with some pups that Ben and I met at Claw and we've known for a little while, named Burlick and Dozer. And got to hang out with them and hang out with Dozer's husband, Gregory. And, you know, it was just, it was a lot of fun sitting and talking with them and hanging out with them and having fun with them. No actual pup stuff per se, but it was a really good time. You know, we stayed with Gregory and Dozer. And that was fun. You know, it was just, you know, a nice place to stay away and, you know, not have to worry about paying for a hotel and blah, 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 blah. But it was also really nice because it gave us an opportunity to just sort of chillax and relax with people. Got to figure out their dynamic, which was kind of cool and interesting and just, you know, people watch and have fun. So that was the fun part. That was the great things about Columbus. Then this weekend, our last weekend when this is after this is recorded, when this is not recorded, when this is posted. Oh gosh, it's gonna get confusing.
Timing wise.
Yeah. We had the men's chorus.
Oh. Everybody dance
now. Board retreat. It was a very interesting but very long day. One of the good things about it was we did this strength finder test prior to it, and we were to determine our individual strengths, our top five strengths that, you know, help us along with things, and just go from there. It was really a lot of – it was a good time to have, but it was just a very long day. But it was a productive day. We got a lot of stuff accomplished, talked about what we want to do as a board and how our strengths, quote unquote, can help us in that regard. So, yeah. And then we had dinner and then we went to a really fun it's called 16-bit. I believe there's one in Columbus as well, but it's 16-bit arcade, and it is they have the consoles where it's free play, and they have, except with the pinball machines, which are 50 cent, but you know, it's, oh my God, it was so much fun. All the like classic games, you had Ms. Pac-Man and Pac-Man and not Frogger, Centipede. And they have some of the more like 90s games like X-Men and Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat. But the classic arcade with the joystick and the buttons and stuff. So it was just so much fun, except that it was loud. It was loud at dinner and it was loud at the bar. So it was getting a little crazy. And then they have specialty cocktails that are named after 80s and 90s like names like. You had a Hulk Hogan, which had a bomb pop in it. You had a Daryl Hannah that had Swedish fish floating in it. I ended up getting a Winnie Cooper, which was a very sweet drink with some berry vodka and a cherry. It was cute. It was a lot of fun. So
yay.
So drinking and pinball games are arcade games.
Always fun.
Oh, yeah. Gary?
Summer is here.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, like, it's definitely feeling like summer to me. Mm. The temperature is up. My air conditioner runs more than anything. And I find myself thinking about all the summertime activities. For example, this weekend, I was asked if I was going to camp. And I was like, no, I'm going to camp next weekend for Bear Weekend. But the idea was very appealing because the weather was nice, you know, and everything's good until I step outside. And it's hot and I'm like, maybe not. So, yeah, it's been really good. I find myself not wanting this to end. Like, you know, I know it's going to. I'm just concerned about how quickly or it's going to change or what's going to happen from there. So at least for me, where I'm living, I don't know about the two of you, but.
Well, it's actually really nice here, too. We've had some stormy weather off and on just because of the it's so hot and so humid that it's just, you know, making the storms happen. But after a while, it goes away. And I think this weekend has been really, really nice. But I totally feel you on the camping. I would have preferred, I know this sounds bad, but I would have preferred this weekend camping over the weekend when I went to Roseland. Only because it's not oppressively hot. It's just decent.
Well, speaking of, how was camp at Roseland?
Oh, have I not talked about that?
No.
Oh. So. Maybe I haven't. Anyway. So Roseland was fun. Roseland was a lot of fun. We went there for Bears and Letterman weekend, and part of that entailed us doing demos and spouting or scooting our leathers around. It was a good time. It was my first time ever going camping. We had a cabin, so it wasn't really camping. It was cabining, but glad we got the cabin. The cabin had an air conditioning unit, and it was taken advantage of. The cabin was really nice. Camping.
Huh? You went quote-unquote camping.
Yeah.
Well, it's not okay, so you didn't do primitive camping.
Correct.
Primitive camping is where you go in a tent, no electricity.
Yeah.
Like, basically, bitch, you suck it up and you deal with it.
Yeah.
So
I did not do that.
Upgraded.
Oh, yeah. And even then, that's not the full upgrade. There are like deluxe cabins and there are actual like rooms. There are like people can get like a room with like a bed and stuff, like a bed and breakfast almost. But the campground was very nice. The campers were very friendly, in more ways than one. It was a lot of fun, looking at all the, just cause it's a clothing optional campground, except in certain areas, but most of the places clothing optional. So you got to see a lot of dick. And bellies and fur and chest and balls and ass, all the ass. There was one guy who you might know, Gary. I won't mention, I'll say his name later, but who I would have loved to have made a great acquaintance with, considering two things. One, he wore yellow a lot of the weekend, which is, I'm learning, is a new fetish of mine. And two, he just was a really cute cub. So that was fun. It was nice to be in an environment where I didn't really care so much about body image. Granted, it was a mixed bag of people. It wasn't just bears. It wasn't just Leatherman. It was just the regular people who stayed there for the weekend or who have, you know, spots for the whole week, you know, for year round kind of thing. And, but it was a good time. I actually, it just happened to be several friends of mine from the chorus were there that weekend as well. So it just, I don't know if they were coming specifically for the leather weekend or not. If they were, great. If not, you know, no big deal, but you know, they enjoyed themselves. They said they did anyway. And it was a really, really, really good time. Would I do it again? Yes, definitely. Probably in the same parameters, you know, get into cabin, spending a weekend. It's a long ass drive from Cincy, longer than I was thinking it was. And the last hour of the drive is basically up into the mountains and you lose all like cell signal and data signal. And, you know, if you are lost or you get, you know, stuck, you're kind of fucked unless someone's coming by, you know. So now I understood why some of the members went, they did a caravan, like they met in Dayton and, you know, made their way up. So I could see why that would be appealing, because then if something happens, you could ultimately have someone else there.
Yeah, the one thing about getting to the campground, I used to work there for several seasons as a manager. You are correct that the last 45 minutes or so is windy hills on the sides of mountains, because Roseland is, or was when I was last there, 222 acres in the West Virginia mountain range. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's part of the Appalachians or not. It probably is. But I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous and beautiful once you get up there, but it is remote, and you are like basically feeling in some ways that, you know, Deliverance was going to possibly take place up there. But everyone, you know, once they get there, I remember many times working in the store and greeting folks and checking them in, and they're like, oh my God, I never thought we were going to get here. And I thought I was going to fall off the hill and all sorts of crazy shit. So yeah, it was pretty interesting. Of an experience, and I absolutely loved it. And I agree with you, because it is clothing optional in a lot of places. You get to see a lot of stuff that you would not necessarily in public. And so when people find out about that part of my past employment history, and they're like, oh, you used to work at a clothing optional campground? What was that like? And I'm like, it's not as exciting as you think it is. And they're like, really? And wherever I am, like if it's a bar or I'm like, I don't know, somewhere in public, and there's people around, it's a perfect point to give them. And I say, okay, just do a 360 real quick and look around everybody here. And they go, yeah. I said, now imagine all of them naked. And they look at me funny. I'm like, no, go ahead, do it. And then I wait about 20 seconds. And I said, okay, now that you've got that mental image, that was my job every day. And they look at me and I'm like, yeah, gay men have a stereotype of taking care of their bodies. Again, it's a stereotype. Some gay men are really proud of themselves and they try to work really hard to have a good physique. Not all. So I have seen more than my fair share of droopy bits, jewels, parts, asses, you name it. And things that have not been taken care of. So
Yes.
Yeah, I got to see lots of floppy penises, but I also got to see lots of things that I didn't want to really
see. Yeah. And that was true. There was a lot of that. There was some but at the same time there were a lot of
Eye candy.
Oh my God, the eye candy. There were a couple of like daddy kind of guys there that, And what else was there? But at the same time, like the good thing I liked about it was that people who I normally wouldn't find attractive, I got to see, you know. All of them, you know, not just the like the I don't want to touch that or anything, but like the smaller guys that are that wouldn't really be on my radar were suddenly on my radar because I'm kind of looking and going, huh, that's impressive. Like, that's a very nice penis you have there and a very nice body. Weird thing about me, I love tattoos. So there's always someone's tattoo that I was like looking at and I have to take a look again, just be like, I want to know the story behind that tattoo. Like, I want to know what's going on there. But, you know, it was fun. It was a really good time. And I'm glad we went, and I will probably do it again. We'll probably go camping, quote unquote, again. But we'll see when that is. Because it's a bit of a trek, and it's a bit of an expense, and it's a bit of a it just was interesting. There's a lot of stuff that was going on that I was a little surprised with, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed the trip and you enjoyed camping and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, that was the good part. I concede that I can actually enjoy this kind of thing without it being too terrible.
Cool.
Yay. How about you, Gary?
Oh, well, we already did Gary.
I bounced back to Damon because we were talking about summer and camping, and then I realized that Damon didn't really talk about camp, so I wanted to give him a chance.
About Roseland.
I wasn't sure if it was going to be a rural, it was a great time, or a we are not doing that again.
All right. So let's go into this. Gary, what's been going on over in Facebook?
We have been busy.
Ooh.
We got a good number of Facebook likes. So I'm going to run through the list, and then I'm going to make a comment or two about folks that are on the list. So Webby HN, which is Derek, he's the webmaster for HeftyNet. That's what his nickname means. Liked us, as well as Brian T. Carney, Brad Moyle. Eric Riley, Kurt Grasnow, Justin Trahan, Christopher Carpenter, Keith Chiodo, Dave Kaufman, Tammy Evanow, Ms. Tammy, Yay! Sean O'Neill, Chubbs Lover Chaser, Joshua Michael Finley, Bert Pye, Seth Randall Blanton II, and Tom Wyszyszki, or something Polish-ish. Sorry, Tom, I totally screwed your name up, and I kind of know you, so it's awful. Yeah, so a bunch of people I know on the list, some of them personally, some of them I follow online. And Mr. Eric Riley, you are number 900 like.
Yay!
So we are now at approximately 912 as of this recording.
Oh, sweet.
So we just need another 88. And we'll be at 1,000. And I think we should try to figure something out. Not so much a contest, but if we get to 1,000, I think the 1,000th person should get something. I have to kind of figure out what that would be.
Are you sure you wouldn't want to do like a raffles? Like if we get 1,000 people, everybody will get a chance?
Oh.
Because what if they were the 12th person? They have no chance of getting whatever it is.
Well, that's true. Well, we could do both. We could recognize the 1,000th person.
Person.
And then all 1,000 could be put into a random drawing of some sort. I got to figure out what we can give away, though. Maybe we can give away a Jeff Workman CD.
Ooh.
For a second there, before you said CD, you said give away Jeff Workman. And I'm like,
I know that his boyfriend, Ronnie, would really object to that. So it's not what.
Yeah, I was like, I think that's a problem. Is he already taken?
Yeah.
And would Jeff agree to that?
Yeah, we could give him away as in like, here's Jeff Wormkin. Do what you must. Doesn't mean you get to do anything. You just get to have him for a little while.
Yeah, maybe we can talk to Jeff and he can do like a signed CD or something.
Yeah.
But well, what we could do is if he agrees to that, maybe we'll contact the folks that win and ask them what they would like in case they already have a CD of his. Maybe there's a different CD that they want.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe they don't have any of his CDs and they would like all of them.
And it will be really easy. What I'll do is I'll just log in on one of my characters in WoW and do a slash roll 1,000. And that will be our random number generator.
Ahaha.
So actually, slash 999 because the 1,000 person already gets something.
True.
Right? So it's only fair that if we're going to give something away, since they already got something, to give it to somebody else.
Sweet.
Good deal.
There we go.
Fun.
That sounds great.
Anything else? I'm only watching kind of the Facebook stuff. I don't think I've seen anything in regards to YouTube subscribers or
due to certain things right now, I haven't had a chance. I need to reset up to log into Bear Underground. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, future show if there's anybody else there. In the meantime, let's go into this.
Oh my God.
It is Urban Dictionary with Gary.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's our new intro, David.
Hold up. I played this before. The only problem is I played it with something else at the exact same time.
Okay. Because I hadn't heard that before.
I love it. It is from a vintage, like 1950s anti-homosexual education film.
You got that specific one?
Someone posted, it was like, oh my God, check this thing out. Like, you know, from our history. And I was watching it and listening to it. And I'm like, oh my God, these educational films had the best soundtrack stuff. Anyways. So yes, Urban Dictionary, today's Urban Dictionary phrase ties to our interview, but you're going to have to listen to the interview to make sense of it. Cause it has to do with the subject, character in the book. So our Urban Dictionary phrase is shirt cocking. And the definition is men who go about their day with a shirt on but no pants or underwear.
Huh.
Which means Damon at camp probably saw guys that were shirt cocking.
I did. I did see men that were shirt cocking, and I saw men who were completely nude. Or I saw men who were just enough too shy that they were, they covered their one, if not both, of their lower regions there. They either were covered their cock and balls, but like in a jock or whatever, or they would wear like an underwear or a swimsuit, you know, very skimpy kind of swimsuit. But, you know, that's okay. It's clothing optional.
Right. So it explains further that cocking, the word, can be used with other terms. For example, cowl cocking is where a man wears only a superhero cowl, such as a Batman's cowl, but no pants or underwear.
Oh, God.
Well, that entry doesn't mention if he's wearing, like, a shirt.
So essentially, cocking is your cock is out.
Yeah, in a way. But I think cocking is referring to that you're naked from the waist down. And everything above it is the prescriptor. So hence, shirt cocking means you're wearing a shirt but nothing else. Or the cowl cocking is you're wearing the cowl over your head but nothing else. So I guess you could cape cocking or turtleneck cocking. Or jersey cocking. Or upper body Spanx cocking. I don't know. But the main character in the book that we have an interview with, Wayne Hoffman, he has an issue about wearing his shirt. So I thought that was funny that there was a...
But taking his shirt off.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. There was a thing regarding to shirts. So...
Nice. And speaking of the interview, now it's that time of the show where we get into our little regular topic. We'd like to welcome to the show Wayne Hoffman. Wayne, say hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Wayne is the author of a new book, An Older Man. And now, Wayne, why don't you tell us a little bit about the new book?
The new book, An Older Man, is actually a sequel to my first book, which was called Hard. But you don't have to read the first one to get this one. This book follows a man named Mo Perlman, who is 42 years old, a bear, and on vacation at Bear Week in Provincetown with his ex-lover and his ex-lover's new lover. And he goes there thinking that he's going to have a great time picking up all these daddy bears and sucking a lot of dick and maybe, you know, find some romance and a fling in the dunes or at the dick dock. But things don't go exactly as he planned. And he starts realizing that he's not the young cub he used to be and that maybe he needs to change his strategy a little bit if his sex life and his love life are going to stay active and fun and interesting.
Hmm.
Good.
Nice little brief preview.
So we have a bunch of questions. I'll go with the first one. And your descriptions of things are very good. I don't want to say vivid, but they are specific. So it's easy to imagine what's happening, where it's happening. So my question for you, though, is how much of the book is personal experiences?
A lot of the book is personal experiences. That doesn't necessarily mean all of it are things that happened to me. There are things that either happened to me or that happened to people I know. But if what you're really asking is, you know, do I go to the dick dock and suck a lot of dicks? The answer is yes.
Yay. Because
every writer worth his salt has to do research, and I've been doing research there for a couple of decades.
Ah, so it
so
was
who
research.
Knew that this,
in-depth yeah. research.
This, who knew that you that 20 years ago or however long you were going to write this novella and you were like, I'm going to use all of this to write an amazing book for a community of men.
You know, the trick is I'm also by day a journalist and have been for, I don't know, 25 years. So I'm always taking notes in my head and I don't drink. So I remember everything that happens.
Ah.
Hmm.
Good. Mental note, when you're Wayne, probably stay on the drinking so you remember said, just in case it might come back to haunt you.
It helps remarkably. You'd be surprised.
So the main character, Mo,
yes,
goes to the Dick Dock in Provincetown during Bear Week, and he has a complete strategy, almost to the point of like he's going into battle. And he has this war plan, and I found this absolutely mind-blowingly like a good thing, fun, and very specific. And that's kind of why I was asking the question, because as a self-possessed cocksucker, I was amused to no end about the whole like, okay, I'm going in the evening. I got to look for when the tide rolls in. You wear jeans, not shorts, because of the wet sand. Blah blah, like all this stuff, and I'm like, oh. There's no way, there's no way this author does not know what he's talking about.
I do know what I'm talking about.
You basically snip those portions out of this book, and you could create a little pamphlet called "The Bear's Guide to the Dick Dock."
Yes, correct. It's also good for non-bears.
yeah.
You know, Mo. When we first met Mo in Hard, he's sort of, I'm not going to say obsessive, but he's very concerned with details and efficiency and how to make things worth his time, because he's a busy guy living in New York and he needs to know what's a waste of time and what's not. So he sort of figures out how things work and then figures out what he wants from them. And that's how he makes his choices. So when he's now in his 40s in an older man and he goes to Provincetown, he knows exactly what to find and how to find it. It doesn't mean his system is foolproof. It's not. But it's about trying to figure out what the best chance he has of getting what he's looking for. And if what he's looking for is to suck a lot of dick, this is the place to go. And if he wants to go, this is the time to go. And if that's the time to go, then this is what he should wear and this is where he should stand. And this is who he should talk to. Because, you know, different people have different things they're looking for. If he was looking for a big group scene, or if he was looking for someone to fuck, or he was looking for someone to take home, those are all different things. And maybe a bar would be better for one, or staying in a different place would be better for another. But he knows what he wants and he knows how to get it. He's been doing this a long time and he's been paying close attention.
So in other words, he's got plenty of experience.
He has experience, and he puts the experience to use, because he knows that if he goes at the wrong hour, it's not going to work. Or if he goes, I mean, like, one of the things he knows is that, and this is true in Provincetown, that the bars close at 1. He knows if he goes to the Dick Dock after 1, the people who are coming, first arriving at the Dick Dock, are people who have been out drinking all night and struck out at the bars. So they're coming to the Dick Dock as a last resort, and they're drunk, and he wants nothing to do with them because they're not that much fun, and they're kind of desperate but also drunk and sloppy. He's going earlier because he's looking for people who really care more about getting their dick sucked than they did about going to a bar and having a beer. That's the people he wants to meet, and so he goes at a different hour. But that's because that's what he wants.
Right. So he's very serious about his enjoyment. He wants someone who is serious also about getting off.
He's really looking for someone who has the same priorities. That's the important thing.
Priorities. Priorities are important. Yes.
I would agree with that. So in that, the priorities department, I don't want to give it away, but I got a very interesting insight to the character of Mo when you said that from his perspective and the Dick Dock, there's an exact number that seems to be perfect in the amount of men that he gets off. And that cracked me up to no end because I was like, wow. I'm like, that's very specific. And also,
I've done 10 this round. I'm good for the evening. I mean, it's about time to
switch out. I've done 20.
My shift is good. Over. Yeah.
You know, exactly. I've done a baker's dozen. It's all right.
There are different reasons. It's not like Mo is going to stay there until he's had sex with 10 men, because that's not his. When he's done, he's done. If that happens to be around 10, that's really lucky for him.
I think he had 110 and 16.
So. The other thing that he knows is that if he's at the Dick Dock and he's thinking about Spirit as pizza, it's time to leave the Dick Dock.
Yeah.
Because like that. I did like that.
If you have a bunch of dicks in your face and you're still thinking about pizza, you need to just go get the pizza.
It's so funny that you mentioned that. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, David, can we get an amen for that?
Yes.
My favorite part of that was basically like, all right, if I'm thinking about food, we're done with dick. Like, yeah, like the, no, the sex dick, is over because I'm a bear and I'm hungry.
Yes. Again, priorities.
I'm sorry. Protein shakes are just not enough.
My ass is hungry and this cock is not going to satisfy me. So let me just move on to. Yeah. I and the worst part is.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Your ass is hungry. I would think the dick would help. But if your belly was hungry.
Yes.
Then that's something else. Okay.
Like this, I can kind of foresee that because you can, if you go to like any bear run, you kind of get, you see those waves of like after the after party where people are like, oh, we're over here playing around and having fun. And then like slowly but gradually people lean towards the buffet or whatever's left over or the snacks and cookies. And, you know, and it's either one of two things. It's either a, I'm done for the day and I need some snacks before I head to bed, or I need to replenish and refuel before I go back.
I need fuck fuel.
Yes. Oh, that's fuck a hashtag. Fuel. Fuck fuel.
Fuck fuel.
Yes. I have to remember that for the future.
Don't worry. Just you can always reference this episode and see in our hashtags for the show.
Yeah, very, very much agreed. So there's a thing about the dick doc that is a subplot in the book that I will admit made me very nervous.
Oh.
When it comes to culmination later, and I'm not going to spoil it for the listeners of the interview show here.
Oh, so much foreshadowing.
It is, though, but
The resolution, what I was expecting it to be foreshadowing, wasn't exactly what what happened. But
right.
I saw it coming.
But here's the question that I have. I'll preface and then I'll ask the question, Wayne. In the book, there's a lot of talk between Mo and the locals and visitors to P-Town about police cracking down on the dick doc sex scene.
Yes.
And there's a lot of back and forth, and it's very interesting how you interplay about the reality, quote unquote, by the locals versus what everybody else is hearing as rumors.
Yeah.
And you kind of lay out this whole case of like a little bit about why some of these things are being said the way they're being said and that kind of stuff. So what I want to know, my question is, being that you're a person who's been going to P-Town for a good number of years, is that a reality now in 2015, or is that something you totally inserted into the book?
No, it's still a reality now, but I'll tell you this. Provincetown, if you've never been there, Provincetown has a reputation as being sort of hedonistic and anything goes kind of place, which it kind of is. But this is still Massachusetts. This isn't California. So it's still sort of Yankee uptight on a social level. The rules can, on an official level, can be loose, but the rules on a social level are still sort of all about propriety. So you don't see clothing optional bed and breakfasts in Provincetown the way you would in Palm Springs, for example. But in Provincetown, what they tend to do, this isn't officially written down anywhere, but I've noticed over the years, there's usually one thing every summer they're cracking down on, which means some years it's sex on the beach in the dunes. Some years, or sometimes it's smoking pot in the dunes. Sometimes it's the dick dock. Sometimes it's the back rooms in two of the bars. It's almost never all of them at once. And one summer it's one thing and the next summer it's another. So when you go, if you care about these places, you kind of have to talk to locals and find out which thing are they busting this year. Because that means probably the other things are okay. So if this year they're busting people on the beach, it means the dick dock is fine. If this year they're busting the dick dock, it means the back rooms are fine. So they really only do one thing at a time. This year, you know, I'll give you an example. When I say the town is still kind of a – it's not an anything goes kind of town. Every tea dance during Bear Week has a different theme. Sometimes it's what kind of music. Sometimes it's a kind of outfit. And one of the tea dances they've had for Bear Week the last several years is singlets. People wear wrestling singlets, or to be honest, you know, really skimpy singlets that you couldn't actually wrestle in any meaningful way.
But I know those.
It's a very popular day. Guys pack their singlets specifically to go to that tea dance. And this year, the townspeople, whatever that means exactly, voice their dissatisfaction with so much skin being on the parading down the streets in the middle of the day. So the answer was not to ban singlets. It was to turn the singlet event into a nighttime event so that most of the families with kids who come just visiting for the day are gone. Now, personally, who gives a shit and what difference does it make? And anyway, people who brought singlets wore them to tea anyway. So it didn't really do anything. But yeah, I mean, it changed it a little bit. But that's just to give you an insight into what the thinking is. If they're focused on whether people are wearing a low-cut singlet on the street during the day, then yeah, some years they're busting the dick dock, and some years they're closing the back rooms, and some years they're ticketing people on the beach for having sex on the beach. And other years they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You never know. You have to talk to locals. And as with any large group of people, it's a game of telephone. Everyone has misinformation. Everyone's telling you a different story. There's usually a kernel of truth in there somewhere, and then a whole lot of rumors.
Yeah.
You just don't know. And that's when, in an older man, when Mo gets to Provincetown, he keeps hearing the common thread is that the dick dock is being busted up this year, that the cops are keeping an eye on it. But everyone's telling him a different story, and some of them are no big deal, and others are a very big deal. And he doesn't know which ones are true. He, by this point, Mo has an idea which ones are bullshit and which ones aren't, because in Hard is all about AIDS activism and public sex activism, and Mo is a big public sex activist in the 90s, and so he knows what's true and what's not true of the real scare tactics that people try to throw around. But he still doesn't really know exactly what's happening until he sees it for himself.
I caught that. I liked that, even though this is technically a sequel, you don't have to read Hard in order to understand the character and like the background and stuff. You gave enough information throughout the story that you get, okay, this is kind of what his experiences have been and where he comes from, and that kind of stuff. So yeah, when that comes about as a culmination, that whole subplot point, I was like, I kept getting very nervous because my imagination was running away with me about what was going to happen to Mo and or another character. So yeah, it was very interesting how you played that out, and I was like, okay, like, and also that whole interplay about all the people and the rumors, and like those that were his friends, Mo's friends that knew about the rumor.
So, dick doc, technical difficulties and dick doc.
Do you want to start with the question again, or do you want to start with the answer again?
The answer, please.
Okay. So we're talking about the dick doc being under attack.
Yep.
Yes.
So, you know, Provincetown is in some ways a very liberated and rambunctious kind of town, but in other ways it's not. I mean, it's not California. It's not Palm Springs. It's not Key West. And often, most summers, at least one thing is being closed down or ticketed or attacked. Sometimes it's the dunes where people have sex. Sometimes it's the dick dock. Sometimes it's the back rooms that two bars have. Sometimes it's policing what people wear on the street. It's usually one thing, and it varies from summer to summer. This summer, the locals decided they didn't like the singlets that men were wearing to tea dance on one particular day because they were too revealing. So they decided that they had to change that event to a nighttime event because, God forbid, people should see men wearing singlets on the street.
Oh,
but
scandalous.
So there are two things to keep in mind. One is that in most summers, only one thing is being policed at a time. So you can be pretty sure if they're ticketing people for having sex in the dunes, that the dick dock is probably fine. But if they're ticketing men for having sex in the dick dock, the back rooms and the bars are probably fine. It's usually one thing at a time, which isn't official policy. That's just how it is. But the other thing is it means you don't really know what's happening until you get there and talk to locals. That's when you have to go and find out what's happening that summer. And inevitably, when you have a group of 10,000 people on vacation, the stories you hear and the rumors you hear, it's like a game of telephone. No one has the same story. Some parts of it are true. Some parts of it aren't true. And so when Mo gets to Provincetown during Bear Week and he hears the dick dock is under attack, he knows that's probably true, but he doesn't know what does that mean, it's under attack. It could mean something really minor.
It was intriguing to me.
And we're back again.
So where were we?
We were, let's see. We covered the dick dock stuff and cracking down.
Okay.
So
do you want to talk about taking your shirt off?
Yeah. So there were two points in the book that came out to me. One was an obvious one, that Mo has a body dysmorphia type issue, that he doesn't like taking his shirt off in public.
True.
He only does it in private. It's very interesting to me, because I had that issue prior to coming into the bear community, and for a brief number of years afterwards. Mostly for me, it was about swimming. Being an overweight guy, I just really didn't feel that I wanted to be the center of attention that way. So I connected with Mo on that. And the other thing, though, the one I wasn't sure if you were intending, was whether or not Mo struggled prior to an older man, like somewhere maybe between hard and an older man, whether or not he struggled with his bear identity, meaning he didn't see himself as a bear or a cub or whatever.
And I guess I can. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, in hard, Mo is not a bear. He is kind of aware of the bear community. This is the late 90s when hard takes place. And he's a hairy guy and he's overweight. And he knows a bit about bears and they're sort of on his radar. And he uses some of the lingo. And he winds up actually posing for a bear porno magazine, but that's accidental, if you can believe it. A photographer takes his pictures and sells them to the magazine. So it wasn't Mo's idea. But so he's starting to kind of see himself as a cub, but it's not really part of his identity. By the time he gets to an older man, it's 15 years later, 16 years later, and it's enough of his identity that he's specifically going to Bear Week in Provincetown. And he does identify as a bear, but it's not the central core of his identity. And Damon, I know you had found a part of the book that sort of gets sussed out.
Yeah, I like this. I'll just go ahead and read this directly. Mo wasn't one of those capital B bears who was proud of his gut, psyched about his bear physique. He was a small B bear, an accidental bear, a bear by default. He hadn't intentionally cultivated this look and often wished he had a different body. But that day, on Commercial Street, Mo was a hot ticket. Not just someone whose sexual skills compensated for his physical shortcomings, but someone whose appearance was an actual asset. Taking his shirt off didn't seem like such a big deal after all. I personally really like that.
Yeah, so he had this like kind of transformational moment, which I found interesting. And I want to tag back to when you mentioned about the unintentional photographs in the magazine. I think it was called Woof.
Yes.
It comes back around plotline-wise. Interestingly, in this book, you put in that he runs into somebody who remembers him visually and talks about that issue. I thought that was quite funny. Funny in the irony part of like, oh, you saw that? Okay. I did that a long time ago, sort of. The thing about what Damon read, that transformational moment, the only thing that I personally, it's not really a criticism, but for me, I was like, as a person who used to kind of have this issue, I didn't have an epiphanal one moment that changed my whole perspective, like a light switch from there forward, which is kind of the way I felt Mo reacts. Like he's in a public, yes, he's in public and there are dozens, if not, well, hundreds around him at that moment, and he gets a lot of like recognition to the positive, and he has this like new puffed out chest type of self-esteem, like, yeah, like I don't think he feels like, yeah, fuckers, take it all in, this shit's sexy. Like I don't think it's that. but notably from that point in the book, he doesn't have any issues with the shirt thing, and I'm like, really? Because I'm like, it seems like, to me, I was kind of like, oh, I guess it would have resonated with me more if he was hesitant the next time at a tea dance or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like two or three times and realize like, I'm just being an idiot about this.
Well, his epiphany, there are ways in which I am Mo and ways in which I am not Mo. Like Mo, I'm in my 40s. I'm Jewish. I'm a writer. I live in New York. I am the greatest cocksucker in New York City.
Amen.
All of those things are the same. And this is actually another point where Mo and I intersect, because I did have an epiphany. It was actually a two-part epiphany, if you will. The second part was in an earlier draft of An Older Man, which then got cut out just because of logistical reasons. But so here are the two parts in my own life. When Hard came out in 2006, I was in Provincetown doing book promotion. I had a reading, and it happened to be Bear Week. I had never been to Bear Week before. And I was only tangentially bear identified. sort of like, yeah, I guess you could call me a bear, but okay, whatever. I'm standing outside Tea Dance, and if you've ever been to Provincetown, you know that when Tea Dance lets out, that's when it lets out at 7 p.m., and all the people who are performing or having events that night or the next afternoon stand outside, watch the throngs come out and hand out flyers for the next day, that night or the next day's events. So I was there on the street handing out flyers to the bears as they came out of Tea Dance, and I didn't have my shirt off because I never take my shirt off in public. And it was horrible. I was handing out flyers. No one was taking them because they're like, oh, a reading. Yeah, great. We came to Provincetown for a reading. Who cares about a reading? There's a drag queen behind you who has a show. I'd rather see her. So it wasn't working. And a stranger came up to me and said, you need to take your shirt off. And I said, I'm not taking my shirt off in public. He said, it's bear week. You need to get over it. If you take your shirt off, you'll do much better. And so I did. And he was right. And it did much better. People took my palm card and they came to my reading, and it was much, much, much better. And people were woofing at me, and I was like, well, this is terrific affirmation. That's the first epiphany. And Mo has a similar epiphany when he finally takes his shirt off in public and people respond positively. The second part is that after finally getting comfortable taking his shirt off and realizing the sky's not going to fall, and actually some people like him with his shirt off, he gets lulled, because this is what happened to me. He gets lulled into the notion that, oh, he can take his shirt off at Tea Dance all the time. And he, in my own life, I wound up taking my shirt off the next time I was at Tea Dance when it wasn't Bear Week. Huh. And, oh, that didn't go well at all. Mm. And any reservations I had about ever taking my shirt off in public were, in fact, confirmed. No one but a bear wants to see me with my shirt off. And I was quickly reminded of that as soon as I did that when it wasn't Bear Week. And for Mo, the same thing's going to happen. So yes, he is very quickly transformed into understanding that he can take his shirt off at Tea Dance and be comfortable. That's only true one week of the year in one place. Really, he has to be in a bear-dominated place where even if you don't like bears, you keep your mouth shut that week. Because bears run that town that week. And if you don't like big, fat, hairy guys, you better keep it to yourself. Mm. But really, that's one week. Even in Provincetown, the other weeks of the year are not like that. And I go to Provincetown multiple times a year, and I won't take my shirt off on the dance floor unless it's Bear Week. I won't do it.
Hmm.
So I think if you bring up a really good point that is similar to bear runs. I put on a run that has to do with an indoor water park event. And I mention this because every year I get asked about, and some people talk to me about the body issues that they have and that they don't. They want to know if they can wear a shirt when they go to an indoor water park that has like slides and a wave pool and all that. And I'm like, sure, you can. But then I typically hear back from individuals or from people that know them and say, this was really good for them. Like they got to be in a space where they felt comfortable with themselves because nobody was judging. Like,
yes.
Not a staff member, not anybody else in the general crowd thing, which sounds exactly what you're describing. Like Bear Week, spot on. Other times, not so much.
Because, you know, I took a friend to Bear Week for the first time 2 years ago who was not bear identified. He's in his 50s and not bear identified, but he came because I had a spare room and he said, okay, I'll go with you. And I told him, you don't have to be a bear or be into bears. The sort of ethos of Bear Week, and it's not perfect because people aren't perfect, but the basic sentiment is you don't have to be attracted to anybody, but you're not allowed to be openly revolted by anybody. You cannot pass judgment on someone. So if you see someone, and again, if we go back to people wearing very skimpy wrestling singlets to Tea Dance, some people look a certain way in singlets and some people look a different way in singlets. The appropriate response is the people you find hot, you find hot, and the people you don't find hot, you admire for having the balls to step out of the house wearing that singlet, because that's difficult. It's hard. And so your range of responses is from, wow, you look great, to good for you. That's it. You can't criticize someone or slam their body during Bear Week. You just can't do that. It's not okay.
Yeah. I can understand that. I actually have gotten that. I that's one thing that I was mentioned earlier in the book too, just that whole kind of general consensus rule about Bear Week in particular, that there is this whole non-spoken or unspoken rules about, you know, body shaming and whatnot. You know, It doesn't matter what they look like. If it's not your thing, that's okay. Just keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself and be nice to people. My God.
Yeah. I mean,
and also the people that sometimes get criticized for being A-list bears. And this is true at Bear Week or any bear run or any bear bar. Like the big muscle bears who are incredibly hot. And they're dancing shirtless. And you think, oh, of course they're shirtless. Of course they're trying to soak up all the attention. Go up and talk to one of them because they have the same shit body issues we all have. And maybe you think that they don't, but almost guaranteed they do. And also, if you think they're only looking at other muscle bears, they're probably not. I mean, we all have the baggage we carry around. We all have challenges when it comes to taking off our shirts or dealing with our bodies or looking in the mirror. It's not just bears either. It's all kinds of people. So just because you look and see someone and think they must not struggle at all, then they probably do. And Mo, in the book, is the kind of guy who, if you saw him on the street, you might not think that he spent a lot of time looking in the mirror feeling very disappointed in what he saw. But he spent his whole fucking life looking in the mirror feeling disappointed. And you might not know that, and maybe you would, but you can't guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say that I'm happy about the journey that Mo takes in the book and the things that happen to him. The thing that cracks me up is you have a really good way of writing wit and banter between the characters. You know what I'm talking about, David? Like there's some great back and forth. And I was like, yes, a gay man writing a book about gay men that gets it. Yes. Because I did read a book in a gay book club once many years ago that we found out after we finished the book in our discussion table that was written by a woman. And we're like, yeah, we can tell. And it wasn't meant to be so rude and slamming, but we were like, there's just some things missing from this, these nuances. It was very much like a Harlequin romance, but with just men. It was a little interesting. There were some great moments. And I wanted to mention about the one that made me bust a gut out loud is about 100 pages in. And Mo is, I think, at brunch with his friends Aaron and Kevin, who are just in for like a one day kind of thing.
Yes.
And they're very long friends and they're out to brunch. And there's this whole scene. I'm not going to read it, but it made me crack up that Mo's like, all these things are happening around me and I'm a single man and I'm old and I'm fat and no one, blah, blah, blah. Like he's just, kind of dumping all his quote unquote self misery out. And his friends are being very supportive. But what's hysterical is in the midst of this, the waiter totally like cruises him. And that's one of the comic points is Mo keeps getting hit on or like cruised throughout the entire book. But sometimes he's oblivious to it. And I'm kind of like, okay, like I could get that because I have, friends that are just like they miss everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if the man dropped to his knees in front of, and just undid the zipper, they'd be like, what are you doing? Hello. Right. But this scene was hysterical because there's this great witty back and forth. And Mo knows what he's doing because he says these things to the waiter, like very flirtatiously. And the best thing at the end is when his friend Aaron says, so old maid, tell us again about your lonely nights waiting by the phone.
Yes.
Basically like, bitch, please.
You know, this is one of the things that I knew had to happen when I was writing an older man, because Mo is now in his 40s and is realizing that the things he did in his 20s aren't necessarily working for him anymore. Some are, but some aren't. And he needs to kind of adjust his game. And in the midst of that realization, there's a lot of self-pity and a lot of, oh, woe is me. I'm fat. I'm old. I'm single. The man I wanted to fall in love with me didn't fall in love with me. Boo-hoo, boo-hoo. And I wanted to let that out in the book because that's real. A lot of us do that, whether it's about getting older or about being rejected or anything, or, oh, I don't like the way I look. Well, a lot of us go through this sort of self-pity. So that's, to me, felt honest. I wanted him to air that, but I also wanted his friends around him to call bullshit. And they do, whether it's Aaron and Kevin or his ex-lover Gene and Gene's new boyfriend, Carlos. They sort of hear Mo out. They let him get his self-pity out. And then they tell him like, you're so full of shit. Or like, boo-hoo, go cry in your cocktail. Like, You're sad because you're in your 40s and you're only having a ton of sex instead of a ton and a half of sex. Like, come on, get over it. So there's sort of a reality check on him. But I wanted both things to happen. I wanted him to be able to air his self-pity that a lot of us really do go through, and then also have his friends tell him, like, we listened, we were good friends, and now here's a mirror, look in it, and get a reality check.
Right. I think he goes through a really good journey of the reality of people. I found it interesting that there's this kind of dichotomy about he goes to P-Town for two things. He wants to suck dick, which he does a bunch of, and
yes,
well, and has many satisfied customers.
Yes.
But then, and he also has different avenues of how he makes that happen. I appreciated that you discuss about the change between meeting in bars to meeting online and hooking up and using apps and all that.
Yeah.
But then there was this whole other thing about how he's like, but I want to find the one. And then he thinks he meets the one, and then he's rejected, and then he's dejected because he finds out why he was rejected. Yeah. Like this whole like emotional like roller coaster thing that he goes through. And I was like, wow, like Wayne really understands this stuff. So I'm not going to say that you've had this experience, but you obviously are aware of it through the lives that you know.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's me and some of it's just people around me. I mean, in reality, I'm married. I've been with my husband for 26 years since I was 18 years old. And I suck a lot of dick at the dick dock. And I cruise online and on apps and in bars. Those are not mutually exclusive. And so some of these things have happened to me. Some of them have happened to friends I know because, you know, I'm in my 40s now. I've always been attracted to older men. So when I was in my 20s, I knew men who were in their 40s and watched what they were going through. Now I'm going through it myself.
Yeah.
And sharing it with men I know who are now in their 50s and 60s, and also for the first time with younger men who are in their 20s and 30s. So you get to watch all the stages of evolution. And everyone goes through their own journey, but there are commonalities. I mean, there are points you hit in life where things start to shift. There's the first time you have more gray hair than dark hair. There's the first time someone calls you daddy. There's the first time you like someone calling you daddy. There's, you know, there are all these different stages. And the same is true also of beardom. I mean, there are people I know who embrace beardom from the outset. There are people I know who get dragged kicking and screaming into beardom. There are the people who gradually find their way into it. We all have different ways of finding the bear world and also our own place in it, whether we have a place in it or not, or whether we think we do, or whether we officially do, or whether we have a place in the bear world as well as a place outside the bear world. There are all different ways to find where you belong and where you feel comfortable.
Yeah. The one thing I liked about the book is I really felt, because at the beginning when I saw the title of An Older Man, not knowing anything about the book, I assumed that we're going to get this guy and he's going to find this older man that's the love of his life or something. But really, when you reference an older man, you're really talking about Mo.
Yeah.
And his kind of transition to essentially accepting himself, not just his accepting his body, but also that You're an older man now.
Yeah, you know, it happens. And it changes if you're used to having particularly sexual relationships that have a generational difference in them. It really shifts things because you might still be looking at men who are older, but you might now be the older person younger men are looking at. And there's even a stranger thing that I touch on in the book where if you're into guys who are in their 40s and you're in their 40s, the guy you're into might actually be your own age. And it might be the first time you've ever had sex with someone your own age.
Yeah.
For me, I was about maybe 38 when that happened for the first time. I met a guy in a bar in New York. He looked to be about 40, which is an age I love. And he was looking at me thinking, I'm into guys who are older, who are about 40, which he loved. And we realized we're exactly the same age. And neither of us had ever picked up a guy who was our own age before, but we were suddenly at the age that we found attractive. And it was a very strange thing because we were the same age. It was neither of us was the older man, except we kind of also both were.
Yeah.
It's a very different dynamic. And that was, again, another moment of adjustment going, huh, this is weird.
Yeah. I admit with you.
When things collide. Damon. Yeah. When the ages collide. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing for me because when we're pretty close in age, we're about a year or less than a year apart. Okay. So I understand the transitionary thing because I always wanted mature people in my life, which kind of came with age, because I used to say when I was in my 20s and my 30s, people were like, why don't you date someone your age? I'm like, because they're not mature enough. They don't have their shit together. Correct. Not that I had my shit together, but far too often I was finding way too many like, no. Like if I had a checklist, I was like, this is not working. You know, 7 minutes of fun is one thing, but you know, dating and the rest of it, forget it.
It's very different. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I found it interesting, though, that the other thing that we haven't talked about, which we'll just kind of leave this as the mystery nugget, is that the other part that Mo has to come to grips with is younger people finding him attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because that has happened to me in the past like 5 to 6 years where I've transitioned from basically I had to have like a heart to heart moment with myself and be like, bitch, you ain't in your 20s no more. In fact, you're not even, well now, not even in your 30s no more. Right. So you have to learn to adjust to the fact that you are now at the age and the demographic that you've allowed to yourself to like, you know, get involved with. But at the same time, where are you going to go? How are you going to treat this? And I'm happy to say that I have met men, young men who are in their 20s, who are mature and have a sense of themselves. And kind of redeem and shift my whole perspective about, well, when you're 20s, it's all about partying and you don't give a shit about nothing and you don't care about life and blah, blah, blah. You're not serious, quote unquote. So I'm happy to see that that's a part of the discussionary point in the plot that comes up for Mo and how it plays out. Everyone's going to have to read the book to find out.
Yeah.
You know, and this too, there was a point when I turned 40, which is 4.5 years ago, I'd written a piece for Instinct magazine about when I was probably 20, I was in a bar in DC where I was living and I was hitting on this older man, which is not unusual. I mean, it was really ridiculous. Anyone could have told that I was hitting on him from outer space. I was so blatant. And he kind of laughed and I was embarrassed. And he said, you don't have to worry. I know what you're doing. I used to be you. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I used to be the 20-year-old guy hitting on 40-year-olds. And I said, okay, great. So tell me what happens to me. Like, give me a glimpse into my future. What happens when I'm 40? And he said, one of two things will happen. Either what you're into is older men, and when you're 40, they'll be 60. Or what you're into is age difference, and when you're 40, they'll be 20. He said, you won't know which it is until you're 40. And in truth, he was right and wrong, because – it's not an either or, at least in my experience, because, yeah, I am looking at men who are 60, but I'm also for the first time looking at men who maybe not 20, but in their 20s for the first time. And one of the things I can tell is I have a sense of empathy for the younger men who are looking at me because they really are who I used to be. I mean, the things they're looking for, I know, because that's what I was looking for when I was their age. So I know what's attractive about older men to a 20-something, because that was my life. So I think oftentimes we forget that men who were in their 40s used to be in their 20s, and men who were 60 used to be 40. It wasn't that long ago. So they sort of – the other person probably knows just what you're going through.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a good point that you bring in for Mo to handle, to deal with, because it happens to everybody. You will find yourself at a place you didn't expect, unless for some reason you hear this conversation and then you're like, I'm totally going to prepare for what I'm thinking. Which I doubt you'll probably forget, and then you'll have this epiphany moment. You're like, oh, I remember that podcast. We're talking about where you get old, and suddenly
this thing. Podcast, it would have changed my life.
Yeah. But that being said, what I want to know, because I want us to stop discussing ad nauseum about how great the book is. Where do people get it? How do they get it?
Well, the book is available. Hard and An Older Man both are available in paperback or as ebooks. You can get them from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can find them in bookstores, although you might want to call ahead and make sure. You can also order them directly from the publisher, which is Bare Bones Books. That's Bare, B-E-A-R, barebonesbooks.com. You can go to any of those places and find them in paperback or as an ebook.
And we'll have a link to the Amazon ones on the post of the show at comesoutloud.com, which, you know, you pay the normal price and we get a little kickback. Ding.
Excellent.
And if anyone wants information about you, your personal website that they can go visit to learn about, because you're planning on doing a book tour.
I'm doing a book tour. It'll really hit the road in September and October. I'm at waynehoffmanwriter.com, and you can find out more about the books, more about my other book that came in between these two, which has fewer blowjobs, but, you know, still a good gay read, which is called Too Much Sugar. You can read about other events that have happened around the book, other news, and read about the upcoming book tour.
Yeah, so that's waynehoffmanwriter.com. For those of you that are just listening to the show, it's www.waynehoffmanwriter.com. And then there's a whole bunch of series of links, including a beautiful picture of our very handsome author, Wayne Hoffman, yes, that we have on the show today. So, Wayne, it's been a great discussing this with you. I'm very happy that we got the opportunity and the chance to discuss this. The publication date is August 8th, which is a Saturday. The show is coming out on August 9th. So one day right afterwards, people start learning about it through the podcast.
Perfect.
And we look forward to you having success with the novella.
Thank you.
And possibly a sequel. Wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing.
You never know. And an even older man.
Ah.
We'll see.
Older man, but, you know, same characters, different title.
We'll see.
I will admit, I am intrigued to know what happens to Mo in the future. I'm not going to give away what happens at the end of the book, but now I'm kind of like... No.
You'll have to read it.
Yeah.
And then you decide what you think happens and send me the note.
Ooh.
Yeah. Do I have to describe all the cocksucking?
Well, that's, I think, the whole point. Yes.
You may have to do some research, Gary.
And if necessary, please include audio and video files.
There you go.
Yeah, please demonstrate.
I feel like I have now this kismet spirit with you, Wayne, and we should definitely meet in person.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been great having you on. Thanks for taking your afternoon with us to record the show.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
And by all means, feel free to reach out to us if you have anything else that you publish that you want to have us go over and discuss. And or if anything comes up with the tour, perhaps, we'd be happy to talk about it.
That sounds great.
All right.
Excellent.
All
right.
Thank you. So we go from a book which actually talks about sex to pictures, which are sex.
E.
So this is a guy who, if you peruse Tumblr, you see him a lot.
Oh, my God.
But recently, this must be recently, mm-hmm, he's gotten some tattoos.
Uh-huh.
And started working some tattoos.
Covered in ink.
Oh my God.
Oh my fucking God. And it's that the patterns is just interesting. It's like he was trying to like tattoo armor on himself or something.
Oh
yep,
my God.
That was my thought. It very much looks like body armor.
I'm seeing this. Who is this guy?
His name is Chris, I believe. I can't remember if I've ever seen his full name. But he is one gorgeous hunk of meat.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is a lovely thick man with pierced nipples at one point. Yeah, I don't know if they're still pierced or not.
If I haven't already, I probably have reblocked this one.
I don't think they're pierced, at least in those tattoo shots. And I'm sure that the rest of those shots are near the rest of it. He's got a nostril.
Nose ring?
Nose ring.
I know there's a proper term for it, but we're totally screwing up.
Fuck.
I know. He's hot as fuck.
Septum.
There we go.
I believe.
I thought you were trying to figure out his name.
Oh, God. No.
The name of the piercing.
I will. He will be named Tattoo, and he can call me whatever the fuck he wants to as long as he calls me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
God damn. And normally I hate the really big, like, dark, like, tattoos that he's got.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it in a way that is
interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. And he wears it well, as it were.
Yeah.
Very well.
Yeah, it's just, I agree with you. It's like somebody who's just doing straight up big black tattoos. And, not with any real design per se. But this kind of has a design. It's just that all the black pieces are big chunks.
Yeah.
They're not like small pieces that put together to a design. It's big pieces put together to design. And I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting, to say the least. Yeah. Moving right along.
You're welcome.
Son of a bitch. That was mm-hmm. a sexy bear. Anyway, okay. So my pick for today, kind of in relation to our topic, was I called it a poolside treat. And it's a... I almost think I know who the guy in the yellow Speedo is. I'm almost certain that's Mr. Steve Ellis, a.k.a. Claire.
Yeah, it's Claire Bear.
Yeah, thought so. Could. I always get confused sometimes when I see a tattoo that I don't recognize. And granted, I don't really look at his tattoos. But anyway, so he is... There's Claire Bear in his yellow Speedo. Huh?
Too busy looking at something else.
Yeah, yeah, especially with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there is Mr. Steve Ellis, Claire Bear, in his red bear goodness, in a yellow Speedo at the pool, and someone just decided to take a lick. Someone else in the pool, and who I'm also looking and might potentially also be a ginger.
I think he's a ginger.
Is.
Yeah.
He's definitely a ginger.
Yeah.
Back here. And
yeah, I will forgive the fact that the guy on his knees trying to lick that beautiful bulge is drinking a light beer. It's nearly unforgivable, but sex will fix that.
Nice. But no, it's just, I remember reblogging this one and like going, yep. I wouldn't be that forward, but.
Uh-huh.
That's just.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And just, you know, a little lick, maybe more later.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, or probably in a bit later. Hell no. Don't pass that up.
Yeah. Don't stop there. Like, don't stop there.
Don't stop till you get enough.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. You don't stop. Don't stop till you get enough. That was one of the questions in the Nerdtacular was this past weekend, and I've been watching the Battle of the Frog Pants All Stars. One of the questions was name tracks from Michael Jackson's Thriller. Although, Don't Stop was on the one before that, so I suppose that wouldn't be one. Never mind. Ignore me. Live it on.
Gary.
So mine is a Vine video of a reoccurring guest who's a favorite of the host, Mr. Matthew, aka Fuzzbutt. But it's absolutely evil.
Why is it evil?
If you have not seen it before, in fact, it's funny because when I went on Tumblr to look at it, my screen says, warning, this post may contain sensitive content.
Aww.
And then you have to click view this post in order to be able to see the video. It's called Butt Wiggles.
Oh, by the way, this also has a loop counter. Yes. And right now the counter is going up rather quickly.
As we're looking at it.
Oh, that's my true. God. It has over 5,000 loops that have played.
Oh, my but God.
But that could just be one person sitting there watching it because it loops. So it's each loop that it does. So
That's true, which means a whole bunch of people have probably fapped to this, or many people have watched it a couple of times.
Mm. Either way.
I just watched it like 3 or 4 times as we were talking here.
Anyway, good for yay Fuzzbutt, yay Buttwickles. Yes, it's evil.
And his eyes and his grin that's on his face.
Yes. Because
the almighty power of the ass.
Because I know what's behind that look.
Well, apparently, and I'm not really sure why, but I think this weekend he was on his own.
Huh.
From what I was catching, Gabe was away. So, because he was making comments about, I have the whole place to myself. And I'm like,
So, I have a feeling this is an invitation.
Oh, this image or whatever?
Huh?
This little video?
Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Somebody come over and help me.
Good God.
Well,
that'll be fun to play at his 30th or 40th or 50th or 60th birthday, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. All right.
God bless him.
Moving on. Let's go into links. If you haven't seen it, this has been around for a couple months, I think, now. Part of Will Wheaton's tabletop season 3 thing was if they got up to a certain stretch goal, they would do an RPG show with an RPG that Will Wheaton helped create and some of his friends. And he would be the game master. And the show is called Titan's Grave, The Ashes of Valkana. And oh my God, the production on this is like amazing. And they have it in decent size. Each episode is a decent size, just strong, about 40 minutes. So it's not like you have 3 long hours of RPG goodness going all at once. So you get it in essentially bite-sized chunks, but I think they're really good bite-sized chunks. And they have some people did artwork for it, which was amazing each episode. It's really, really cool. They have a whole intro sequence about the basic history of Valkana, and you gotta watch it. It's really, really interesting to do that and get caught up. It's like chapter 8 right now.
Wow.
And you obviously can see that they're having fun. There's, you know, the serious bits and like they had a thing where it's like 5 gold and a party for payment. It's kind of cool. Anyways.
Cool.
Check it out. Titan's Grave, The Ashes of Valkana. The guy who does the VO of the intro sequence is really good. I like it. There you go.
Huh.
Good deal.
Gary, what do you got?
Listen up. All of you Star Trek aficionados.
Speaking of
which, especially those of you that are fans of TNG, The Next Generation show. William Shatner, a.k.a. Captain Kirk, has been making documentaries for the past couple of years, and he just released in July a new one called Chaos on the Bridge. And it's a behind-the-scenes post-show, so to speak, documentary about what happened in the first 3 years of making TNG. He talks to executive producers, producers, scriptwriters, and cast members. It is so enlightening. I was enthralled. I think it's about 70 minutes long or an hour. It's not real long, but it's available on Vimeo on demand. You have to pay for it. I think it's like $7.99 right now. It might be a little pricey. Yeah, true, for a rental, or you can actually own it, I think.
$12.99 for stream plus download anytime.
Yeah, it's really good. I was absolutely riveted watching it because basically, for those that don't know, Gene Roddenberry was not a perfect man. And there's so much discussion about him and his personality and his lawyer and all the stuff that happened with creating that show and what happened in those first years. And it also provides some very interesting perspective and talks about what happened to some of the characters, why some actors left and their characters were either killed off or brought back. And it's stupefying in a way to learn all this stuff, because I will say this, if you don't want to know all this background stuff, then don't watch the documentary. Like, if you like living in the world of the way the show is presented and you just accept it the way it is, be very happy and don't watch the documentary, because watching the documentary totally dispels a whole bunch of things. And I think it kind of bursts the imaginary bubble by making true to reality what it was like to make the show. I can't say enough about how much I really enjoyed what he did. And what I love about it is that William doesn't, Mr. Shatner, he doesn't take on a particular voice. He really does an excellent job of interviewing all these folks and then asking some pointed questions, and found through the course of all these interviews how to weave a narrative. Now, I know that some people have kind of made some negative comments because they don't like the fact that the theme that's used is a Western. There's some like graphic novel type artistry that's used for segue transitions between different pieces. But it makes perfect sense if you think of the fact that, in a way, Star Trek was like a Western in space. Mm-hmm. In that you had good guys and bad guys and, you know, trying to figure out the in-between and stuff. So I don't know. I don't really take issue with that. I thought it was kind of interesting what they did with it. So I watched it recently, in the past week. And I found out about it. How the hell did I find out? I might have caught it from his Twitter, which I'm not a big Twitter user. But Mr. Jeff Workman, who we mentioned earlier, has been using an app called Periscope, which allows you through Twitter to live video stream what you're doing. And a number of celebrities have been live streaming like their performances and events and stuff. And like, for instance, Tori Amos had a concert in Denmark, I think, this weekend. And you could watch part of the show. Like, you don't get to sit and watch all 2 hours of performance for free, but you get to see some of it. And Jeff's used it a couple of times for studio sessions where he's recording his new albums. And he also used it. Cincinnati this weekend had a festival of some sort, and Ridge Runner was playing. So because of that, I'm a little bit more paying attention to Twitter because of this Periscope app. And then I think that's how I caught that William Shatner was like, I have a new documentary. And I was like, what? So, and I checked it out, and I was like, wow, this is pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Neato.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what, folks? That's the end.
Yay!
Anyways, contact us. You can go to our website, comesoutloud.com. Just send an email, comesoutloud@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. Leave us a dirty message. You don't even need to say your name if you don't want to. That's 361-COL-TALK. That's 361-265-8255. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/cubsoutloud, cubsoutloud.tumblr.com, twitter.com/cubsoutloud, google.com/+cubsoutloud, and also you can join the Bear Underground group, Bear Underground, the official Bear website of Cubs Out Loud. Please pop over to iTunes, give us 5-star, 4-star, whatever. We'd appreciate it. We'll read any of your reviews on the show. Also, you can review us over on Stitcher Radio. Give us a thumbs up there. You can find me anywhere on the internet. It says Box Tech, Box Puppy, Box Cub, Box something or other.
I am TheaterCub79 on Bear Underground, Tumblr, HeftyNet, and Nomad Cub on Fat Life.
And I'm pretty much known as GearBear73 anywhere on the web.
And with that, take it out, everybody! Take it out, everybody!
Have a good one, y'all!
I ask you to do one thing. I ask it every show.
What?
This show, I had to ask you twice.
I'm sorry. Honestly, I was trying to finish up the synopsis, and I heard you say goodnight, everybody, and I'm like, let me finish this sentence.
You don't have time. I know. So David takes forever to make his part, and I usually come in at a very specific point, and then the whole thing kind of got goofed up. And then I heard a sound clip, which made me laugh.
Oh.
I heard a little girl's voice say, goodnight, everybody. I was
That was me.
Oh, okay.
Goodnight, everybody.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm now going to turn my air conditioner on because my balls are sweating.
Aww. Sweaty balls.
I'm glad I hadn't stopped recording.